They teach spiritual truths as well as give a partial history of the Pleiadian race. Some teachings warn of impending natural and man-made disasters connected with a new age to come. It seems that these Pleiadian beings were from an orientation in their history where warning humans about approaching cataclysm was part of their contact philosophy. Though these teachings may have been applicable when they were given, one may question how they relate to today's mass consciousness. There are indications that the mass consciousness of Earth made a shift from a future of disaster to one of increasing responsibility during the time period of 1980 to 1982. Since these Pleiadian teachings were given before the shift was made, perhaps they represent an old idea. It does not necessarily mean they are not valid, but it does mean that perhaps there is a different outlook coming to humanity instead, one which reflects the choices and changes humanity has recently made on a mass conscious level. The Pleiadian contact coming to us presently, both in physical and telepathic forms, may echo a different voice. Some claim to be the future descendants of Maya's Pleiadians. These Pleiadians speak openly of their difficult past and why they felt they needed to use certain tactics in dealing with Earth. They admit to having their own motivations for contact, and thank this planet for all they have learned. They are helping society to shed light on other forms of contact in which they themselves are not directly involved, such as negative abduction experiences. They are sincerely assisting humanity by whatever means they can, allowing the planet to achieve a global as well as galactic viewpoint. The Pleiadians have specific reasons for being tentative in their present interactions with Earth. For thousands of years they have stepped in either to protect us from danger or to control us like children for our own good. Some splinter groups even manipulated humankind for its own purposes. This has been a source of great shame to them. They now realize that humanity must make its own choices and they must trust the human ability to do so. They have created a karmic cycle through their interference. For their own growth, it is imperative that this cycle be relinquished. The thought of perpetuating the pattern of interference on Earth is the single most fearful idea facing a Pleiadian. Will Pleiadian contact with Earth continue in the future? Since they are the most similar to the Earth human physically, in fourth density form, it seems appropriate that they become one of the first to walk this planet undisguised. They stress, however, that as much as humanity might want to meet its cousins from the sky, they will not initiate an open contact program until humanity can embrace its brothers across the street. It is up to this planet. It is humanity who is calling the shots. Are we finally ready to let go of the fear of recognizing our heritage and accept their outstretched hands? Footnotes here. 1. Splinter groups also colonized other systems in Earth's galactic neighborhood. Visibly, we only see 7 stars in the Pleiadian system. From the Pleiadian point of view, there are hundreds of stars with habitable planets, unseen from Earth, which make up the Pleiadian colonies. 3 common examples of these myths include the Egyptian accounts of Set and Osiris, as well as the Sumerian conflicts between Enlil and Enki. These seem like archetypal battles. Many cultures have legends of similar figures that can be considered counterparts, or perhaps a translation of one story. 4, there are indications that negative groups, such as the Syrians, began contact in the 1930s as well and that their negative actions were always countered by the more benevolent groups such as the Pleiadians. This heavy contact activity, by both positively and negatively oriented groups, appears to occur in 20-year cycles, 1930s, 1950s, 1970s, and as we will soon perhaps see, the 1990s. Next headline is The Gateway of Arcturus. Verily, when a person departs from this world he goes to the wind. It opens out there for him like the hole of a chariot wheel. Through it he mounts higher. He goes to the sun. It opens out there for him like the hole of a drum. He goes to the moon. He goes to the world that is without sorrow. Brihadaranyaka, Upanishad. When passing through the prism of Lyra, there were some beings who decided to remain in non-physical form. these beings lovingly chose an existence of service to those of the more dense realities, such as third density Earth. They realized that on developing physical worlds the evolving life may need assistance from other realms. This assistance would come in the form of archetypes, angels, guides, and unseen inspiration. These beings were attracted to the area of the star, Arcturus. During their initial attraction, the star field in the Arcturus region was slightly different from its present manifestation, but the energy of the area remains constant. There is a gateway or crossroads in the fabric of time and space in the general area of Arcturus. These beings soon realized this gateway passed dimensionally through almost every other area inhabited from the dimensional infusion. It was then that they began to understand their purpose to aid consciousness from many levels of awareness. The Arcturian purpose is multifaceted. One idea is that they serve humanoid kind as an ideal. They represent the future self of an individual or a society. Their energy is, by its nature, a magnet that draws out positive potential and integration from the very depths of being. They reflect to Earth where it is heading in its evolution. Once humanity evolves into non-physicality, the ideal goal is to achieve a consciousness similar to that of the Arcturian mass consciousness. They recognize themselves as a group matrix, committed to the idea of the evolution of consciousness. Very often Arcturian beings will manifest to humans as angels. It is known that one of the purposes of an angel is to serve humankind. In a very real sense, the Arcturians have a dedication to humanoid kind. They have chosen to learn about physicality through physical beings. They are etheric in nature. Their energy can be felt as a presence, a surge of creativity or unconditional love. They will manifest according to the belief system of the person with whom they are interacting. To the more traditionally religious, it will be as angels. To some of the more modern seekers, perhaps as extraterrestrials or future selves. Either way, the outcome is the same: an interaction with a truly loving being devoted to the service of physical beings and thus the whole. Because they serve physicality, they interact not only with the humanoid beings upon a planet, but also with the unseen kingdoms whose evolution is different from that of humanoids. Each planet has its own Divic kingdom, their consciousness energy of the plant, mineral, and animal kingdoms, and the Arcturian energy acts as a higher aspect of a planet's Divic kingdom. Again, they repeat the idea of reflecting the future evolutionary ideal. There are a small number of Arcturians who choose to experience physicality in order to serve. Rather than entering physicality through the birth process, they choose to walk in an already existing body on a physical world. They do not have the need, or the karmic compulsion, so to speak, to enter through the incarnation process. By various agreements between souls, a trade is established. The soul of a human who is emotionally in pain will enter the Arcturus realm for healing, and the curious Arcturian will temporarily embody upon a planet. The primary service the Arcturians provide for physical beings is that of emotional healing. Arcturus is more of a realm than an actual place, and within the realm of Arcturus, Earth souls who have had traumatic deaths, or lives, are healed and rejuvenated. Because the gateway of Arcturus connects dimensionally with Earth, all who incarnate on Earth must pass through the Arcturus realm before they reach the planet, unless they consciously choose not to. This provides a healing for those about to be born, and a strengthening of their choices and desires for the physical life about to occur. The gateway of Arcturus prepares non-physical consciousness for the intense focus of physicality and thus sexuality. From the Arcturian point of awareness, physicality and sexuality are the same expression. The Arcturus energy is particularly adept at various forms of sexual healing, such as in the case of sexual abuse during childhood or adulthood. The healing energies of Arcturus are equally nurturing for the abused and the abuser, for both are in much pain. The utilization of the Sirius Arcturus healing matrix can be quite powerful in such cases. The cetaceans, especially dolphins, can represent the Sirius Arcturus matrix to those in pain. Since dolphins are quite sexual and unconditionally loving in their expression, They can serve as a physical manifestation of the Sirius, Arcturus healing matrix. This matrix is totally non-threatening, providing subtle healing on very deep levels. At death, the human consciousness passes through the Arcturus realm. There they are nurtured and cared for until they awaken to their greater reality. In the case of traumatic death, a great tenderness and healing is shared so that the soul about to awaken makes a smooth transition. In after-death experiences, the light that is perceived at the end of a tunnel is actually a representation of the Arcturus vibration. This vibration will be translated through the perceiver's own belief system. Because Arcturus is primarily sixth density, it is often perceived as the Christ or Buddha vibration. The light can be equated with the future or higher self, Christ self, of an individual. So in a sense, during the death process one is merging with the higher self, which happens to share a frequency range nearly identical to the Arcturus realm. Their healing occurs. In all of creation there is nothing that heals, nurtures, and rejuvenates the human spirit as completely as the Arcturus vibration. Another idea that is synonymous with the Arcturus vibration is the idea of creativity. When one is creating, one aligns with the energy of the Creator. Since Arcturus serves as a messenger of the Creator, so to speak, the vibrations are quite similar. In this way, Arcturus has been intimately bound to humanity from the beginning, since humanity is always creating. Arcturus is much more than a star, it is a frequency that one possesses, within. It is a frequency of creation, healing, and evolution. It has been with Earth and other developing physical planets from their inception. It is less a character in the galactic family story than an undercurrent, one that is ever present in the entire dimensional infusion idea. Because the energy of Arcturus is an undercurrent that consistently interacts with us. The Earth planetary environment often translates Arcturian energy into a form that is meant to trigger individuals emotionally. An example of this is the lenticular cloud, a spectacular cloud formation that molds itself into a disc shape. It may look like a spacecraft, but most of the time it is merely the Earth environment translating the energy it perceives at an etheric level. These etheric ships serve once again to remind humanity of its unseen connections. Within polarized reality, Arcturus has chosen a counterpart to reflect other aspects of its evolving nature. Its counterpart is the area called Antares. Within the dimensional gateway or crossroads, there is a joining between Antares and Arcturus which serves as a major focal point of energy in this region. Most of the consciousnesses who incarnate on Earth pass only through the Arcturus vibration. There are others who choose to pass through Antares before they reach Arcturus. These are the individuals who work directly with mass consciousness patterns, matrices, and cellular evolution. Antares is also the dimensional connection point between Earth's quadrant of the Milky Way and the galaxy Andromeda. The Antares-Andromeda connection energizes the abstract concepts of existence and consciousness necessary for physical races to begin to remember their heritage, thus transmuting their past. Most of the other races explored in this work have more individualized agreements with planet Earth. The Arcturus connection is very fluid, very malleable, but no less important. If one likens all the other characters of the story to ingredients in a cosmic soup, one can see how they all add to the flavoring. However, if one likens Arcturus to the consistency of the bouillon in the soup, it is apparent how the Arcturian vibration is a vital ingredient that holds it all together. Many manifestations of the Arcturian energy on Earth can be explored. First, one can say that Arcturus and Sirius form a partnership. Whereas Arcturus works with emotional healing, Sirius facilitates physical healing. The Egyptians knew these connections and called upon the energies of the Arcturus-Sirius matrix for assistance in their rituals. The Egyptian deity known as Anubis was a direct Syrian archetype, but worked with the Arcturian energy. Anubis guided individuals into the underworld, the astral, or through the process of physical death. Though the energies of both Sirius and Arcturus began the healing process with the soul. The representation of the jackal, or the dog, as in the dog star of Sirius, as Anubis is a blatant signal that the Egyptians were aware of the connection. Anubis, as a Sirius archetype, led the departed soul to the Arcturus realm where healing occurs. Arcturus represents integration as much as Orion represents the conflicting or polarized nature of humanity. The archetype of Merlin has often been labeled a bridge. When two polarities attempt a unification, there must be a common ground they both stand on before the merging occurs. Merlin is thus a bridge between the explosive Orion and the healing Arcturus. He is the common ground. It is apparent how his energy has been of major importance, not only to Earth, but to all who experience polarity. Magic is the spark created from the friction between polarities that ignites transformation. Early in the development of Earth, the Arcturans agreed to density themselves enough to be perceived temporarily. They interacted with the early culture called Lemuria by teaching healing skills. The memory of these interactions was carried throughout generations. When the Lemurians migrated to many areas of Earth, these memories were carried with them. The statues of Easter Island are one of the few ideas that remain in the physical of their direct interaction. These statues are not meant to represent these densified Arcturans so much as to pay tribute to them. The position of the statues is skyward, gazing at the horizon, waiting for the Arcturans' return. Humanity has never had to wait for their return. The energy has been present all along. If one looks inward instead of outward, they can be found. They are the human race evolved to its highest potential. They remind humanity and edge it forward into the magnificent spiral of evolution. Home is where the heart is, and the heart is the path of Arcturus. One, this is not a common occurrence. Many who claim to be walk-ins have experienced a more common process that can be called soul braiding. This process is the bringing in of a higher frequency of the soul's own energy, not an exchange of consciousness. It can be mistakenly understood as the entrance of a new consciousness, whereas it is a stepping up and integration of the original consciousness. Two, in many after-death experiences, individuals have spoken poignantly of the bright light they encounter. An account chronicled in Moody's Life Afterlife states, "A brilliant white light appeared to me. The light was so bright that I could not see through it, but going into its presence was so calming and wonderful. There is just no experience on Earth like it." Entering the Arcturan vibration after death can be equated with this experience. Earth inception. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness." Genesis. In whose image were Earth humans made? Many of Earth's oldest scriptures imply that human development was guided by gods who descended from the sky. Even anthropologists are aware of the unusually fast development of Homo sapiens. Some anthropologists estimate that the species Homo sapiens appears to be millions of years ahead of schedule. Whereas the evolutionary development between advanced Australopithecus and Neanderthal took more than 2 million years, evidence has been found on Earth that Homo sapiens, Cro-Magnon, emerged approximately 35,000 years ago. What is even more intriguing is that while the remains of man are continually discovered, archaeologists have found remains from an even earlier Homo sapiens in the areas of Western Asia and Northern Africa. These remains date back 250,000 years before Cro-Magnon man. It should be stated here that Homo sapiens has no evolutionary precursor. Nothing evolved into Homo sapiens, the species simply appeared. Would extraterrestrials be interested in having a hand in Earth's evolution? If so, what could they gain from Earth humans? Perhaps it was a way for them to accelerate their own evolution. It seems evident there were three main groups that orchestrated the Earth inception. We identify them as the Founders, a Lyran group, and a Sirian group. The Founders facilitated the inception from a point of non-physicality and were the overseers of the entire project. Unaware of these non-physical influences, the Lyrans physically orchestrated the inception and employed a Sirian group to assist. Each group had its own motivations for their involvement. Though the motivations were different, the goal was the same: the creation of a humanoid race on Earth. As stated earlier, The Pleiadians involved themselves in Earth's evolution for their own benefit. They felt that if they interacted with humans, not only would they be able to be a part of the development of their previous home, but they could learn about negativity and integration without having to incarnate directly into a world that was playing out those ideas. They were persuaded by the Lyran group, who were well aware of the genetic compatibility of the Pleiadians with the new Earth humans being developed. The Lyran group, a combination of various Lyran races, was always experimenting. Just as humans have certain instinctive drives, such as procreation, these extraterrestrials carry their own drives which emulate their creators, the Founders. The Founders' offspring instinctively carried on with genetic seeding. These Founders were well aware that inbreeding would cause a race to die out, and thus they continually sought new stock to keep the gene pool mixed. There was another primary Lyran motivation for their involvement with Earth. After eons of conflict within the Lyran offshoot races, Vega, Sirius, Orion, etc., they were tired of creating civilizations that were polarized and failed to exist peacefully. They were determined that Earth was to be a planet founded on integration rather than polarity. The Lyran group felt that perhaps what they needed all along was a planet whose beginnings were integrated rather than one that was carrying the seeds of polarity from other star systems. With this in mind, they began formulating their rigid plan for the Earth inception. The Founders, however, had other plans. They knew Earth was possibly going to be the final ground for healing the Orion drama, and therefore must remain polarized in order to resolve the conflict. The Founders knew that the galactic family might finally learn about integration through the experience of polarity resolution on Earth. The Founders allowed the Lyran group to carry out their plan because they knew it would eventually support the cosmic plan. As for the Sirian group, their motivations were much closer to home. They considered Earth to be within the Sirius Trinary star system, thus they believed they had a right to manipulate Earth genetics. The Sirians were interested simply in establishing primitive humanoid races on Earth that could serve as manual laborers while they expanded their colonies to include Earth. Thus they supported the Lyran project with their own goals in mind. The Earth Inception project began. For many thousands of years during the early phases of the Earth Inception project, the Lyrans one watched the developing primate race on Earth with cautious eyes. Occasionally they took samples and made slight alterations to the DNA structures. At critical points in development they began inserting genetic material from the Pleiadians and other groups into these primates. Over long periods it became increasingly apparent that evolution was accelerating at a rapid pace. When this became evident, the crucial prototype experiments were initiated. The story of Adam and Eve is one of the few legacies left that can subtly remind humanity of its beginnings. The tale contains many symbolic references to the saga that occurred concerning the type of species who were to inherit the Earth. As stated, the Lyran group wanted a species founded on integration. Therefore, they felt that the species must have no knowledge of polarity, or good and evil. They strictly controlled the environment of these new humans so they would stay focused on developing as perfect vehicles of integration. They did not want the new humans to become like them, polarized. What the Lyran group did not acknowledge was that they were also restricting choice on the part of these new humans. After generations of working with primates and extraterrestrial genetics, the Lyran group developed a human prototype whose meaning, of the Earth, has been translated into the name Adam. The Adam prototype was introduced on Earth to test its environmental adaptability in many areas of the planet. There were many Adams. When this prototype was satisfactorily adapted, the Adams were recalled. So the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall upon the man, and he slept. Then he took one of his ribs, or part of his side, and closed up the flesh at that place. Through cloning and genetic engineering, a female prototype was created that is translated as Eve. Both were returned to the environment and watched closely. Out of their desire to create a species that had no knowledge of polarity, the Lyrans instructed all who tended the prototypes to forbid them knowledge, to actually deny them the right of choice which all divine beings are granted. Hence, one can see the meaning of the statement by God, "From any tree of the garden you may eat freely, but from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, polarity, you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat from it you shall surely die." The Syrians working with the Liran group disagreed with this philosophy. They felt the Liran's personal desires for creating this species was misaligned with the rights of humanoid forms. These Syrians, although wanting to develop the human race for their own purposes, discovered they had a genuine affection for the new humans. Despite this duality, they decided to intervene, thus inadvertently giving humans the opportunity to choose. The Syrian group warned the humans, and the serpent said to the woman, "You surely shall not die. For God knows that in the day you eat from it your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." 6. Being presented with choice and the need for a decision involving their existence, the humans achieved third density consciousness. When the humans realized they had been deceived by God, they opted for knowledge. Once they made the choice to receive knowledge of polarity, they were fully anchored in the physical. They now possessed ego, or knowledge of I am, and became self-aware. Then the Lord God said, "Behold, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil, polarity. He must not be allowed to reach out his hand and take also from the tree of life and eat, and live forever." 7. Needless to say, the Liran group was not pleased. In their anger, they denied humans knowledge from the tree of life, divine heritage. The human race was thus forced to develop without the knowledge of its connection to the galactic family and the whole. It would truly be a challenge. To ensure that the humans did not seek this knowledge, the Liran group employed some precautions. At the east of the garden, he stationed the cherubim, and the flaming sword which turned every direction, to guard the way to the tree of life. 8. They left humanity its heritage, the legacy of Orion, symbolically portrayed as the sword, without leaving any knowledge of its resolution. There are suggestions in the ancient Sumerian texts that the cherubim are actual mechanical or robotic devices which, in this case, protect the tree of life. What is the literal translation of the tree of life? In Sumerian, the word for the tree of life was Jis.til. Jis meant a man-made device, til meant, and still does today in contemporary Hebrew, missile. Instead of an actual tree, this may mean the vehicle to life, or a spaceship. In Sumerian renderings, there are clear depictions of rocket ships, as well as men saluting these rocket ships. It seems clear that the action by the gods of stationing the cherubim to keep humans from the tree of life was actually denying the humans the knowledge of their heritage. No longer would the earth human be allowed to openly intermingle with the gods or leave the planet with them. Humans were banished from the heavens. What happened to the Syrian group who interfered with the plans of the Lirans? By interfering, they became energetically tied to the development of Earth. They have always had many tricks up their sleeve, and in this case they got the last laugh. When working with the Liran group during the genetic program, they inserted a latent DNA code within the human cells. This code is triggered by an accelerating vibration that occurs when a civilization begins to evolve spiritually. As Earth accelerates toward self-awareness and fourth density, which is occurring presently, the code is activated. Once activated, the human race unwinds its limited vision like a coil until the expanse of all that is becomes visible. It was their way of allowing humanity to eat from the tree of life after all. From these early seeders of planet Earth, humanity has been left a challenge. As stated, the children who are seeded usually carry the genetic codes and deep-seated attitudes of the parents. If indeed Earth was seeded from a point of inequality and lack of free will, might this not explain why humans of many races today still carry an underlying belief in the superiority of the Caucasian, Aryan race, the Liran group? Could it be that the very roots of racial bigotry go as far back as the seeding of the planet? The earliest texts available to the seeker certainly suggest this. The Sumerian records give reference to the black-headed ones who worked the mines of Africa for the gods. If this is the case, that humanity carries the patterns of its forefathers, then this challenge is just beginning. Breaking free from this God spell that has been cast over humanity may be the key to the liberation of the human race on Earth. In Earth's past, the human race has received conflicting signals from the gods.